In chapter 12 of Matthew, we saw opposition to Jesus Christ mounting. We are still in that section dealing with the rebellion against the king. And now as opposition is mounting, we see Jesus leaving in chapter 13. And he's headed for the seashore. A good place to go, I think, whenever you feel attacked or tense. I love the beach. And I think Jesus had an affinity for the seashore because he went there frequently, the Sea of Galilee, an exceedingly beautiful spot. So we read that same day, verse 1 of chapter 13, as opposition was increasing, Jesus went out of the house and he sat by the seaside. And great multitudes were gathered together unto him, so that he went into a ship or a boat and sat. And the whole multitude stood on the shore. Jesus went into a boat for a very practical reason. Keep in mind, in Jesus' day, they didn't have PA systems. No electric amplification. Really, it's only been relatively recently in history that we've been able to speak to large groups of people with ease because of microphones and PA systems. Even in Spurgeon's day, back in the late 1800s, that prince of preachers, that man who at the age of 19 had a congregation of 4,000 people in London at a time when that was unheard of, a powerful preacher. Perhaps the finest preacher since the Apostle Paul. But Spurgeon was a big man, and he firmly believed and told young preachers that they would have to weigh at least 250 pounds if they were going to be effective expositors. That is music in the ears of every preacher. He said, man, get fat, get big, because he believed that girth allowed a projection of the voice that was essential in those days before amplification. Indeed, when you see opera singers, those that project very well, they tend to be larger in size. There seems to be some truth to that. But Jesus, realizing that he was going to be giving a teaching as the crowd was gathering, went out into a boat because, you see, as he sat in the boat a little ways off the shore, as he taught, his voice would bounce off the water and would be amplified to the crowd that was standing on the seashore. Now, I have experienced that personally. A number of years ago, my brother Dave and I led a small team of people into Lebanon. It was a very sensitive mission. And as we were going into Lebanon, we first stopped off in Israel. We spent time there in Galilee for a day before we went across the border into Lebanon. And we were out in the water swimming, Dave and I were, in the Sea of Galilee, and a number of our team was there on the shore, just sort of hanging out. And Dave and I began to converse about some information that was very private. When we came in, lo and behold, we were told, you know, you guys that were out, we were probably out, I don't know, 30 yards perhaps, that far out. We were just talking very, very quietly as we were swimming and treading water. And they told us we could hear every word you guys spoke. There's a great lesson in that, but be that as it may. The Sea of Galilee, particularly, any body of water generally, will tend to act as an amplification system. That is, the sound waves bounce off and spread out. So Jesus here was using this as a PA system. Sitting in the boat, sitting, of course, was the position of a teacher. And he sat there and he began to give them some incredibly insightful understandings. He spake, verse 3, many things unto them in parables. Now, as we mentioned Sunday, the parabolic teaching or usage of parables was the hot methodology of Jesus' time. It was the way that people communicated when they wanted to arouse curiosity and excite interest. They wouldn't use guitars or humor, but rather they would use parables, these short little stories with a great big message. And Jesus took the parabolic teaching form to new heights. The word parable, parabolo in the Greek, P-A-R-A-B-A-L-L-O, if you spell it out in English, para or para means alongside, and balo means to cast or to throw. So the word parable means you're casting alongside. That is, you're taking a story and you're putting it alongside of a truth or a principle that you are desiring to communicate. You're using a story, you're casting it alongside of the principle or the truth in order to give understanding and meaning to those that are listening. To arouse their curiosity, to excite their interest. It's a form of communicating. And he began to speak to them in parables. Now, as you study parables, realize this: the lost and the lazy will not understand the parables. The lost can't and the lazy don't. They are not always easy to discern. You have to have your thinking caps on, your ears open. The parables are not for the lazy reader, the lazy thinker. And the lost, man, they have no idea of what is being said. Because the natural man, as Paul points out, does not understand the things of the Spirit. Parables are for neither the lost nor the lazy, but for those of us who are interested in truth, they're very wonderful and very illuminating. He spake many things. His first, of course, the parable of the sower that we looked at on Sunday. Behold, a sower went forth to sow. And when he sowed, some seeds fell by the wayside, and the fowls came and devoured them up. And some fell upon stony places where they had not much earth. And forthwith they sprung up because they had no deepness of earth. But when the sun was up, they were scorched because they had no root. They withered away. And some fell among thorns, and the thorns sprung up and choked them. But others fell into good ground and brought forth fruit, some 100-fold, some 60-fold, some 30-fold. Verse 9, who hath ears to hear, let him hear. The parable, as we mentioned on Sunday, has two applications. Primarily, it speaks of how we hear the word. Secondarily, it gives us understanding about how we share the word. If you weren't here Sunday morning, we talked about that secondary application. Sharing the word, sowing the seed, and gaining some understandings from this parable, you may want to pick up the tape. But notice here in verse 9 that Jesus says, who hath ears to hear, let him hear. Tune in. Think through. Listen up. That's what Jesus is saying. The Rand Corporation a few years ago did a study on hearing, on listening. And they found what we already know. People don't listen. American corporations, the Rand Corporation said, lose $10 million a day because of people not listening. Employees not listening to the instructions of their employers. Because of their failure to listen, there's waste and redundancy and inefficiency. $10 million a day are lost in American business because people don't listen. One of the former producers of ABC News, who is now teaching at UC Berkeley, a fellow by the name of Andrew Stern, did a most intriguing survey. After one of the ABC News broadcasts, Stern sent out a crew to take a survey of those that were watching the ABC show in its entirety. ABC News at that time put 19 features in a half hour. There were 19 items covered in a usual 30-minute segment. And they found that from their survey, from their poll, 51% of the people who watched the entire half hour, 3 hours after the event, could not tell the pollsters one single item that was on the show. One single item in the broadcast. They watched it, but 3 hours later, they could not articulate one single item of the 19. 51%. Stern's conclusion was, Americans don't listen. And so at that time, a decision was made that news must become simpler and glitzier in order to grab Americans' attention, which is very, very limited. Interesting. Jesus, knowing that tendency of humanity, teaches in parables and says, now let him who has ears to hear, or if we might say it this way, a brain that functions, listen up, think through. This is not for the lazy nor for the lost. The disciples, verse 10, came and said, well, now, why speakest thou unto them in parables? Why are you doing this? And he answered and said unto them, because it is given unto you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it is not given. Whosoever hath, to him shall be given, and he shall have more abundance. In other words, the one who receives and responds will gain even more abundance, more insight. The one who's receiving and responding, more will be given to that person. But whosoever hath not, the one who's not receiving, not responding, from him shall be taken away even that which he had. Therefore, speak I to them in parables, verse 13, because they seeing see not, and hearing they hear not, neither do they understand. And in them is fulfilled the prophecy of Isaiah, which saith, and now, quoting Isaiah 6, a fulfillment of a prophecy, by hearing you shall hear and not understand, and seeing you shall see and not perceive. For this people's heart is waxed gross, and their ears are dull of hearing, and their eyes they have closed, lest at any time they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, and should understand with their heart, and should be converted, and I should heal them. Here Jesus is quoting somewhat of a difficult passage in Isaiah chapter 6 that declares, Isaiah, go and speak to the people, but they're not going to be hearing. Communicate with them, but they're not going to be receiving. And now Jesus is saying that it's being fulfilled completely in him at this time. That is, he is speaking to a people whose hearts are hardened, whose ears are closed, whose eyes don't want to see. Now, here is the question. Why in the world would God send Isaiah in Isaiah's day to preach if nobody was going to be hearing? If nobody was going to be listening, responding, or receiving? And why would God the Father now send Jesus to preach if nobody's hearing, understanding, receiving? Jesus is saying, that's why I'm speaking in parables, lest the unconverted hear and be saved and be healed. Wait a minute, you say. Isn't that why Jesus came? To talk to the unconverted? But wait. God is a perfect gentleman. And He will not force His will on any man or any woman. And those who don't want to know the truth, those that don't want to be saved, those that want to continue on in their carnality, in their wickedness, God will honor that decision. Those who have hard hearts. And so He speaks in parables, lest if He spoke plainly, they would be converted. They would have no other choice. Against their will, they would be saved and healed, and they don't really want to be. So powerful would the presentation be. Jesus could have, through His logic and oratorical skills, He could have convinced everyone who heard, even if it was against their will. Perhaps you've seen films of Adolf Hitler speaking to masses and masses of Germans and firing them up. Hey, that is nothing compared to what Jesus could have done. He could have mobilized the whole country. He could have caught up everybody in what He was saying, even against their will. He didn't do that. Those that don't want to see, won't see. Those that don't want to hear, won't hear. So I will speak in parables. Then why, pray tell, were they included in the audience at all? Both in Isaiah's day previously and in Jesus' time presently, why were these unbelievers included at all? Now listen. Perhaps this might illustrate it best. A number of years ago in West Virginia, a coal mine collapsed and 7 miners were trapped inside for 3.5 days. The rescue workers worked feverishly to break through, and finally they broke through to where these miners were entrapped. All 7 miners were still alive. And when these rescue workers broke through that caved-in mine shaft, man, the miners were just whooping and hollering. Obviously, they were grateful that they were rescued. But one of those 7 said, hey, would somebody turn on a light, light a lantern? And the other 6 looked at their friend, and they realized he's blind. The light is on. The lanterns are lit. The rescue team has brought light into this darkened shaft, but he's not seeing. He's been blinded by the cave-in. But until the light came, no one knew who was blind and who could see. The light had to shine on all 7 before you could differentiate those who could see and those who were blind. So Jesus had to come and teach to both the believers and the non-believers so that the non-believers could be found out as ones who were truly blind and didn't want to see. That's why Jesus spoke to the whole crowd, but in parables. The light was shining. Those who wanted to see would see, but those who were wanting to be wicked, enjoying their lostness, they wouldn't see the light, and it would only prove their blindness. The light came, burst into the tunnel to reveal who wanted to see and who chose to be blind. If you grew up in a farm situation, maybe you had an opportunity at some point to take a lantern into a barn at night. Interesting what happens. When a lantern is carried into a barn at night, it causes the rats in the barn to run for cover, and it causes the birds to tweet and flutter. The same light. It causes the birds to sing and the rats to hide. That's what the parables are doing. The birds, the children of the kingdom, say, "Wow!" And the rats say, "We don't get this. This is dumb." The rats run and the kingdom kids sing. That's why he was speaking in parables, revealing who were the birds and who were the rats. And that's the explanation, in essence, that Jesus is giving by quoting Isaiah and saying, "I'm speaking in parables lest people who choose to be rats would be converted against their will by the power of my oratorical skill, by the logic of my presentation. I won't force myself on anyone." And he still won't to this day. The Lord won't force himself on anyone. Those who don't want to see won't see. But those who desire to know the truth, man, they will be enlightened by the truth. Blessed, verse 16, are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. Verily I say to you that many prophets and righteous men have desired to see those things which you see and have seen them not, and to hear those things which you hear and have heard them not. Peter in 1 Peter chapter 1 tells us the same truth. That is, prophets of old writing prophecies concerning the coming of Christ, not understanding what they were writing, desired to see how it worked out practically. Jesus says, man, you're blessed, because you're seeing those things worked out that confused the prophets in olden days. You're blessed because you're hearing and you're seeing and you're understanding. Hear ye therefore the parable of the sower. Now Jesus gives his explanation of what that parable meant. When anyone hears the word of the kingdom and understands it not, then cometh the wicked one and catcheth away that which was sown in his heart. This is he which received the seed by the wayside, the hardened soil. But he that received the seed into stony places, the same is he that heareth the word, and anon with joy receives it, yet hath he not root in himself, but dureth for a while. But when tribulation or persecution arises because of the word, by and by he is offended, or, as the Greek says, scandalized, and he shrivels up. He that received, verse 22, the seed among the thorns is he that hears the word, but the cares of this world and the deceitfulness of riches choke the word, and it becomes unfruitful. But he that receives seed into the good ground is he that hears the word and understands it, which also beareth fruit and bringeth forth some 100-fold, some 60, some 30. So the sower sows the seed, and Jesus tells us the seed is the scripture, the gospel. It falls onto four kinds of soil. Hard soil, wayside, that is where paths would meander through fields. Soil that was packed down, and the seed didn't penetrate it at all. And the birds of the air swooped down and had it for breakfast. And sometimes people hear the word and their hearts are so hard, it makes no sense. It makes no impact. The second soil represents the heart that says, yeah, all right, wonderful. And they're excited. They receive the word with joy. Maybe they're in a service and they're caught up in the glory of it. Give me a J, give me an E, give me an S. All right, yeah. And with joy they receive the word. They're caught up in the emotion of it. But then suddenly, when tribulation or persecution comes, when people begin to put them down for their belief, or when they begin to understand what it means to take up the cross in their belief, they're offended. And they wither away. The third kind of soil is when the seed falls into good ground, but the ground is infested with weeds, and the seed springs up, but then it's choked out by the weeds. Jesus said, this represents the cares of the world, the riches that are deceitful. Many people were once excited about the things of the kingdom. They were into Bible study, enjoying prayer, engaged in worship. But then they got involved in things, the deceitfulness of riches. And no longer did they have time for Bible study. No longer did they have time for worship, for prayer. The word was just choked out by things. You know, things are tricky, gang. Jesus used a phrase here which is very insightful, the deceitfulness of riches. Oh, if I just had that. Man, if I could just have that thing, I know I would be happy. Not necessarily. Riches are deceitful. In Siam, which today is where Thailand is, they used to revere white elephants. They were very rare. White elephants were thought to be divine. Only a king had the right, the king of Siam had the right to give away a white elephant. No one else could give a white elephant away. No one else could kill a white elephant because they were considered to be divine. So when the king of Siam wanted to just devastate somebody, he would give them one of these glorious prizes, these real treasures, a white elephant. Knowing that that person to whom he gave it could not kill it nor give it away, but he had to take care of it. And the king would give him a second and a third and a fourth white elephant. And these elephants, of course, demanded a whole bunch of food and a whole lot of care. And this poor person who thought he was being honored because the king gave me a white elephant realizes he hates me. I've got these white elephants now and I got to feed them and take care of them. And inevitably that man would go bankrupt, would be wiped out. What he thought was a treasure turned out to be a bummer. We still use that phrase, a white elephant gift, to this day. That's from whence it came. You give somebody a bummer. Here's a white elephant gift. That's what riches are, gang. Oh, if I just had that car. And you get that car. And pretty soon that car begins to demand attention from you and time from you. Oh, if I just had a bigger house. A prettier garden. If I just had this thing or that thing. You know what happens? It's a white elephant. You think it's a blessing when it comes your way, but often it can be a great curse because it takes time and energy to keep it up, and pretty soon it is dominating you. It's deceitful, riches are. The happy man is not the one who has the most. The happy man is the one who needs the least. The happy man is not the one who has the most. The happy man is the one who needs the least. And Jesus said, listen, the word in some cases is going to be choked out. People will receive the good news and they'll start to grow, but suddenly, ooh, I can't come to Bible study. I don't have time for devotions. I've got to polish my car. I've got to tune my engine. I've got to water my garden. I've got to do this and that. And all of a sudden, the Word, almost imperceptibly, but absolute certainty, it is being choked out. Choking doesn't happen all at once. It's subtle. It just slowly creeps up on you and squeezes spiritual life from you. Jesus said, watch out for that. Are things bad? No. Not if you understand that things are just things. Don't possess them. Don't get hung up with them. And when decisions are made about how you should expend your energy or spend your time, if things are the deciding factor, now you are on dangerous ground. You are on weedy ground, thorny ground. Things are tricky. But some seed, Jesus said, falls on good ground and it brings forth bunches of fruit. I find this intriguing that he said some 30-fold, some 60-fold, some 100-fold, because the ratio of seed to harvest is generally 8 to 1. That is, for every one seed you plant, you get 8 grains back. But here Jesus is saying some. The soil is cultivated and soft and workable. And man, when the seed hits that kind of soil, it's incredible what happens. 30-fold, not 8 to 1, but 30 to 1, or 60 to 1, or 100 to 1. We're talking fruit. It brings forth fruit. Now what is fruit? For you students, please understand that the Scriptures signify 6 things specifically which are fruit. I'll give them to you quickly for your notes if you're so interested. First of all, in Romans chapter 6, verse 22, it says that holiness is a fruit. It's called the fruit of holiness in Romans 6, 22. Your life just begins to take on a new wholeness. Not eroded by sin, not wiped out by the world. But holiness begins to grow in you. And a new wholesomeness begins to be worked out from you. Holiness is a fruit. Secondly, Romans 1:13 says that soul winning is a fruit. Paul said, I wish to come to Rome that I might have fruit among you. That is, seeing souls saved. That's a second kind of fruit. Third, Galatians 5. The fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, self-control. The fruit of the Spirit is a fruit. So holiness, soul-winning, the fruit of the Spirit, that character of love and joy and peace. Fourthly, giving financially is a fruit. Romans chapter 15 tells us that. Specifically, giving of your financial resources is a form of fruit. Fifthly, Colossians 1:10 says good works is a fruit. Just doing good things for people. I heard about some brothers and just got together and helped move a person that was in need. Got their truck and took the time and moved somebody that was in kind of a spot. This lady, as she was stuck in this situation, shared with her unbelieving husband that she would call on some Christians. And he mocked and said, well, you know, we'll see what happens kind of thing. And all these guys cruise over with trucks and they're ready to go. That's fruit. That's Colossians 1:10. Good works. Just practically helping out. Also, Hebrews 13:15, sixthly. Are we on 6? Sixthly, Hebrews 13:50, by him therefore let us continually offer the sacrifice of praise, that is the fruit of our lips, giving thanks to his name. So praise is a fruit. When the gang gets together each morning down here at 6:30, man, that's a fruity group. Just coming together for the simple purpose of praising, giving thanks to the Lord. That's a good thing. That's fruit on their account. Sunday night's fruitful time, just worshiping the Lord. Those are six things specifically which the Word identifies as being fruit. Jesus said, some will hear the Word. Falls on good soil. One out of four, according to his ratio. The Word is received. Fruit comes out. Giving. Good works. Praise and worship. Soul winning. Holiness. Love, joy, and peace. These are things which are evident of a fruitful life. Well, another parable he put forth, verse 24, saying, the kingdom of heaven is likened unto a man which sowed good seed in his field. But while men slept, his enemy came and sowed tares among the wheat and went his way. But when the blade was sprung up and brought forth fruit, then appeared the tares also. And the servants of the householder came and said unto him, sir, didst not thou sow good seed in thy field? From whence then hath it tares? He said unto them, an enemy hath done this. The servant said unto him, wilt thou then that we should go and gather these tares up? But he said, no. Lest while you gather up the tares, you root up also the wheat with them. Let them both grow together until the harvest. And in the time of the harvest, I will say to the reapers, gather ye together the first the tares and bind them in bundles to burn them, but gather the wheat into my barn. Continuing this analogy of sowing and seeds, he talked about something which they knew a lot about. That is, when a farmer sowed his seeds, if somebody wanted to do in the farmer, he would sneak under cover of night and throw in other seed, tares, literally darnel. It's the bearded darnel. And as it's growing up, it looks just like wheat. Same color, same shape, same fragrance, but there's no fruit. There's no head of grain that forms. In other words, it soaks up the nutrients, it takes up space, but you get nothing from it. And you don't know that it's a tare, that it's a bearded darnel, until everything is growing up. And so these servants said, shall we rip out these tares? And the master of the field said, no, because if you do, you'll rip out some wheat mistakenly with it. Just wait. Too hard to identify which is the darnel, the tare, and which is the genuine wheat. Let them just grow up together. Don't try separating. Wait until harvest day. The reapers will then make separation when we'll chop it all down and we'll separate it then. The darnel will be burned, the wheat will be brought into the barn. Well, he'll explain this a little bit later. Another parable, verse 31, put he forth unto them, saying, the kingdom of heaven is like a grain of mustard seed, which a man took and sowed in his field. But indeed, which indeed, pardon me, is the least of all seeds. But when it is grown, it becomes the greatest among herbs and becomes a tree, so that the birds of the air come and lodge in the branches thereof. Follow the flow. Stay tuned in. He's trying to give light about the kingdom. First, he talks about the sower, sowing seed, and how some of that seed will fall upon soil like you that receives it and fruit comes out from it. But he also says in this field there's going to come some tares growing right alongside with the true wheat. And by the way, he says, in this idea of sowing, the kingdom, this kingdom that we're a part of, it's like a mustard seed. The smallest of seeds planted, it becomes a great herb, and then it becomes a tree, and the birds of the air lodge in it. Some teachers and some commentators, some taters are more common than others, but some commentators and teachers say, well, now this shows how the kingdom starts small and just grows beautifully. But wait, there is no instance in either history or in botany presently where a mustard seed grows into a tree that would support birds. What Jesus is talking about is abnormal growth, a natural growth. Something which starts so beautiful and small and simple, a mustard seed grows, but then it grows abnormally. And birds of the air now lodge therein. Birds in the Bible always speak of evil. He's talking about the kingdom becoming bureaucratic, losing its simplicity, becoming too big in the sense of organizationally, outward organization, headquarters, huge systems. I was in Switzerland last year, and it amazed me to go through that country. Man, it seemed like every half mile there was a huge church building, cathedral, beautifully built. When you walked inside, it was architecturally impressive. It was awesome. Everywhere these church buildings were built, they were built by the government. Because you see, in the days of the Reformation, Calvin and Zwingli were so influential in the country that the country itself, the state of Switzerland, decided that they would join with the church, if you would. They would build all of these huge church buildings. They would support all the ministers out of state taxes. They would build the ministers' houses, and the ministers had these manses and servants. And it became a big deal. And now when you go into Switzerland and you talk to the pastors and you say, how many attend here? Man, this is huge. How many are here on Sundays? You'll always hear answers like this. Well, we had 8 last Sunday, or we had 3. You mean you meet here with 3 people in this cathedral? It seats perhaps 2,000. It's huge. Oh, yeah. And you wonder, well, now, how are these people supported, these ministers in their manses with their servants? Oh, the state? The government pays for it. It's gotten big, bureaucratic, overly organized. The life has been lost, and now the birds of the air have lodged therein. Death. Death. That's what Jesus here is referring to, I believe, very definitely. What starts as a spontaneous move of the Spirit becomes denominational, huge, big hierarchies, organizations that suddenly it's unnatural. It's lost its vitality, and all kinds of evil birds come swooping in to participate in that thing. Not only with outward organization, but then he goes on to talk about inward deception in the next parable. Verse 33. Another parable spake he unto them, the kingdom of heaven is like unto leaven, which a woman took and hid in 3 measures of meal till the whole was leavened. A woman making some bread, meal, which emblematically speaks of the Word, in the Word, leaven is put in. Leaven is used 98 times in the Bible, and in every single instance where leaven is mentioned, it is always linked with evil. So again, I disagree with those commentators and teachers that say these two parables are describing how the kingdom grows beautifully. Like leaven, it just grows mysteriously. No, leaven is always evil. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 5 concerning a problem where a man was living with his mother in immorality. He said, hey, don't you know a little leaven leavens the whole bunch? Purge you out the leaven thereof. Jesus said, beware of the leaven of the Pharisees and the Sadducees and the Herodians. In the Passover, leaven was forbidden, as you know, to be put into the bread. Leaven speaks of a puffing up, a rising. It's a fermentation process, actually. You bakers might know that. And this puffing up is put into good meal. And I see a very tight connection here that Jesus is saying, in this kingdom, watch out for outward organization where it becomes too big and the birds of the air come in. And watch out for internal deception where leaven is hid in the meal. You get a knock on the door. And somebody says, oh, you're interested in Bible study. May we hold a Bible study in your house? We have some wonderful things we want to share with you. Oh, sure, you say. Come in. Yeah, Thursdays would work out fine or whatever. And they come and they open their Bible, but then they move on to, well, that's great, but now let us show you the pearl of great price. Or let us show you the Book of Mormon. Or the Bible's great, but Watchtower magazine, man, that's heavy. What are they doing? They're inserting leaven into the meal. Watch out for deception. The woman put in the leaven, and it caused a puffing up, because that's the deception that you need to watch out for. What's that? Where somebody knocks on your door and says, hey, it's great that you go out to Applegate. That's great for baby Christians. Let me share with you, though, the real heavies. Can we meet together? We'll come over to your house with the pearl of great price, the Book of Mormon, whatever it might be, and let us share with you the real heavy. That's deception. You stick with the Scriptures, gang. Don't let anybody add to what the Word of God says. They'll appeal to your spirituality, just like Satan appealed to Eve in the Garden of Eden. What did he say? You'll be more spiritual when you eat this. Don't worry about Adam. That old fogey. He's not spiritual like you are, honey. Eve, you're just so spiritual. You just want to be like God. And the day that you eat it, you'll be like God. He didn't say, Eve, let's go party. Here's some cocaine. How about a snort? He came to her and said, hey, Adam, you know, he's fine, but you know how men are. Here's the real insight. Eat of this fruit and your eyes will be open and you'll be like God. It is not incidental that Jesus uses the analogy again of saying it's the woman who hid in the leaven. Because Paul would later on say, because the woman was deceived and not the man, the man is to have authority in the area of teaching, in the area of that kind of ministry in the Church of Jesus Christ. That might sound chauvinistic to you, but it's important, I think, for your consideration that women tend to be more spiritually sensitive and hungry than men are normally. That's the plus. The negative is, because of their sensitivity and hunger, they are also more vulnerable to deception. Men tend to be... not as sensitive. We just aren't. But neither are we as easily caught up in the latest spiritual truth. That's why both are needed. If you have a congregation of just women, who knows where it'll go? I mean, it will go off into the ozones. And you just watch, and you know, it seems so spiritual, but then it starts getting real weird. I mean, it really starts getting a little bit different. But if you have a congregation of just men, man, is it dead. It's boring. I mean, it's solid, you know, and it's right. But you go, come on, guys, you know. We need each other. We need the sisters' sensitivity and expression, but they need our ability to not so easily be caught up into deception. Spiritually, a woman is like a champagne goblet, sensitive but breakable. A man is like an A&W root beer mug. Not very beautiful, but just clunk. That's why personally I am always excited about and so into brothers and sisters having meetings together when they're studying the Scripture. Because that's what's needed. There's just a beautiful symbiotic sharing and balancing. And if you study the cults, it is amazing how many of the cults were founded by women who desire to be more spiritual. And they were led into deception. We need each other. Well, it was the woman who had hid in the leaven. And enough of that. I'm sure I'm going to be getting lots of letters. So Post Office Box 1018, Jacksonville, Oregon is your mailing address there. If you don't sign them, I won't read them. If you do, I will. I wasn't going to get into that. I really wasn't. I'm not. Well, all these things, verse 34, spake Jesus unto the multitudes in parables. And without a parable, he spoke not unto them, that it might be fulfilled, which was spoken by the prophet, saying, I will open my mouth in parables. I will utter things which have been kept secret from the foundation of the world. Then Jesus sent the multitude away and went into the house. And his disciples came and said, declare unto us the parable of the tares and of the field. And we will declare that parable unto you in our study next week. And perhaps on Sunday, maybe on Wednesday, I'm going to go ahead and stop this evening. I can't believe it, but I'm sure you can. Your assignment this coming week is going to be continuing thinking through and praying in the parables. And I would say this, gang, approach it from this standpoint, if you would. How are you doing? Where is the seed falling in your life? Not a word of condemnation, but a word of real honest evaluation. Have the deceitfulness of riches and the cares of this world choked out the word from your life? Or have you sprung up, but when it got heavy and hot, you kind of caved in? All you need to do is be open before the Lord and say, oh, Father, send your Spirit to till the soil of my heart once again. Tenderize me. He will. He really will. Just humble yourself before your Lord and say, I'm hearing what the Word is saying. I hope that not one of us who are perhaps being choked out or perhaps have caved back in because of opposition or tribulation. I hope none of us will allow a hardening of our hearts where we say, boy, I hope that my husband heard that. Or I hope that the person sitting over there got that point. I hope that if it applies to you, that you would have the honesty and the sensitivity to say, Lord, that's for me. The word is no longer vital like it once was. The fruit is no longer abundant like it used to be. Jesus said, I have this against you that you've left your first love. Remember from whence thou art fallen. Repent and do your first works again. Remember how it used to be when you were fruitful. Repent. Just say, yeah, Lord, I'm not there anymore. And do your first works again. What were you doing? Getting up in the morning? Reading before you went to bed? Whatever it might have been, do it again. And you'll find the fruit reappearing. And man, your walk will be blessed 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. Really will be. Father, give us understanding of the mystery of your kingdom. I pray, Father, that the word as we share it here in this fellowship would truly penetrate our hearts and not be picked off by the birds. And Father, I pray for every brother and every sister that we might bring forth much fruit for your enjoyment and for a hungry world to be observing the reality of the kingdom that is within us. Father, protect us from overcomplicating the work that you've called us to. Father, keep us simple as a mustard seed. Keep us radical, Lord. Keep us from deception, Lord. May there not be leaven that has been hid in the meal. Jesus, we hear how you warned us to beware of the leaven of the Pharisees, legalism, and the Sadducees, liberalism, and the leaven of carnality, as Paul talked of. Please, Lord, work in our hearts, even tonight. Work in the life of this church family. May there not be inward deception. But Lord, help us to grow for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.